Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
When was the last time you played? It can feel silly and pointless, but living a playful life can boost your mood, make you feel more connected to those around you, and relieve tension. So why then do most adults fear adding a little bit of play into our lives? Well, joining me now is Dr. Joanna Fortune, a psychotherapist and expert in play in both children and adults, who joins me now to answer some of those questions. Joanna, you're very, very welcome.
Delighted to be here.
Listen, so why do we find it so hard as adults to be playful?
I think, and particularly now in Western societies, you know, we're very caught up in the seriousness of life and the seriousness of everything we have to do. And, you know, being busy has become almost an emotional statement. When someone says, how are you? The answer tends to be, I'm busy, you know, which is not really a feeling. But we tend to use that as, well, that's who I am. That's how I am. So we relegate play to the realm of childhood, and actually at huge detriment to ourselves as adults, because there are huge benefits for us to maintain a playful life, but at least a playful state of mind or a playful way of being in how we negotiate the seriousness of life.
And talk to me, first of all, before we get to examples of what play in adulthood looks like, when do we lose that sense of play? You know, when do we get more serious? And is it more self-conscious, perhaps, when we start maybe censoring that more playful, spontaneous or silly side of ourselves?
Oh, I think that's going to be a slightly different age for all of us. And I think even listening now, if everybody just goes, you know, do you remember the time when you were told, come on now, you're a big kid now, you're too big for that silliness, or you're too big for that nonsense? And that's going to be a different age for all of us. I don't know if we ever really get enough of that. For some of us, though, you know, with good reason and particular context, maybe life was really serious from a young age and we have short-circuited play pathways and we really didn't get enough of that, or we have a negative association. And for some of us, you might be going, I'm still waiting on that call. Actually, it's still very much going on, and good for you. But I think it's really part of what I do is when I'm working with people, is I go back and we do this play audit, or we capture somebody's play history. And what did play mean to you as a child? And even now when we're using that word, I think it can stir up a huge amount in people. People might think, play? Oh no, not for me. I don't do that.
I immediately go back to great plays I used to direct. I did a specialty on the nativity that I did every year.
But there's your play personality. Immediately, you're the director. You're the person who says, this is how it should go. I bet you're great at organising parties and events and get-togethers.
But maybe perhaps not, but it was great back in the days. I must have a great notions of doing that. But yeah, when people kind of think, well, what do you really mean by sort of embracing play? You know, are you telling us to channel our inner silliness? Some people might feel a little bit uncomfortable with that. Or what are examples of play in an adult life?
I think we've got different tendencies in our play as well as those personalities. Some of us are very much, you know, solo players. You know, you like to do things alone. Others are like, no, I like to be on a team. I like doing it in that very structured way. But we have to get to know what it is. I think we're more playful, by the way, than we give ourselves credit for. If you're listening and you go, I don't play, but you always do the crossword and you always do Wordle and you love to share your results with other people who also do Wordle and you're really into Sudoku and things like that, you're playing. That's intellectual. Actual play. It is a form of play.
So it's a form of kind of activity that is away from maybe your work life or the chores you're doing at home or all of the lists of things in our to-do
list.
Something
that sparks joy for you. Something that you go, I really love doing that. I have that exhale emotionally where I'm like, oh, now I'm relaxed. This is it. I love doing this. And I think we know it's good to challenge ourselves and push ourselves a little, not a lot, but a little out of our comfort zone when it comes to play. But I don't want anyone listening, when they hear me say that adults need to play, to think, oh my goodness, she wants us all to be like, you know, children's TV presenters with paint spattered overalls. I mean, if you want to do that, great, go for it.
Because it is an image that sort of comes to mind. So if it's not that, is it? I don't know. Is it about just being ridiculous? Is it about laughing at fart jokes? Or is it about just sort of embracing a sort of a silliness? Like, I mean, I read a piece a little while ago about people. I was actually quite sad that a lot of people a lot of adults couldn't remember the last time they had a really, really hearty sort of a belly laugh. So is that Is that what it is?
It is about recapturing that, because, you know, we forget that a good old authentic belly laugh is one of the best ways that we have to release residual tension that we're holding in our body. And at a time when anxiety levels are rising and people are very stressed and anxious, we need to embrace laughter, frivolity and fun. But actually, a playful state of mind is a curious state of mind. As soon as you're engaged in anything, be it life, home, work, whatever it is, and you find yourself, oh, I wonder if we tried, and how about this? If you're curious, you're in a playful state of mind. If you're wondering, you're then in that curious place. So I think we have to give ourselves permission to just not be so certain about everything and to hold an inquisitive stance about curiosity.
So is it finding antidotes to seriousness and antidotes to the responsibilities that you have in adulthood? Is it trying to find a way to get a break from that?
It's something of that. But I mean, there is a seriousness to play as well, because, of course, there's a lot of lightness in it, but there is a dark side of play. And anyone who's ever observed children at play has seen that. You know, children at a certain age will have, you know, everything killed and explode and die off and then magically come back to life, because anything can happen in play. But, you know, we do see some of those darker themes. It's usually for me a sign when you feel stuck in life and you have that feeling of, oh, I'm just a bit stuck. Not, you know, things aren't coming together and I feel like I'm running to stand still. That's usually a sign that we've forgotten to play. And it's about taking a break from that very cerebral, cognitive, up in your head space and doing something else that can serve as a circuit breaker. And what the something else is different. You know, part of us is, like we mentioned about, you know, that kind of children's entertainer, wacky, wonderful, fun. That's whimsical play. Yep. We've talked about intellectual play. There's also the explorer in us. Young babies learn through exploration play from the earliest ages. It's how they discover themselves, what their bodies do, their bodies in relation to others and the world. And some of us as adults, that is our play space. You know, we wait and we build up all the annual leave we can to go on this big adventure holiday. And that's where we exhale and play. And lots of us have those different play personalities. And it's really about tuning into, what did you love playing as a child? And when is the last time you did that?
Or felt like that.
Or felt like that, indeed.
Talking about children, a lot of times here, and parents are under so much pressure to get their kids into camps and to try and get those places.
Tis the season.
And in a sense, maybe that's quite structured, and maybe parents are under pressure and they need something structured to suit their lives. But are children getting enough time for what's loosely described as unstructured play in their lives?
I mean, many children are not. And you're exactly as you outlined it there. Life is very structured. And what we need to be careful of is that we are truly, when we say structure, we mean structure. Structure is flexible. It bends without breaking. It adapts to changes in the environment, the circumstances. Rigidity does not. Rigidity is immovable. Because I said so, this is the way it is. You know, my house, my rules. All of that is rigid, not flexible. So when we're talking about structured versus unstructured play with children, there are benefits to both. And there, and in my work, because I literally work in play, sometimes I'm consciously choosing structured play because it's play with purpose. I'm seeking to explore something, to open something up. And sometimes it's very much me saying, and it's always child focused, you know, when you're doing that, because I'm still reading the child's responses. But sometimes I'm saying, do you know what, you go, I'll follow. And it's unstructured play in that way. Now, even when we mention camps, there is a physical and environmental structured aspect to that. But within the camp, there may well be high degrees of unstructured play that children are going, and they'll be there in a particular venue for, between particular hours. But while they're there, they have the freedom of expression, exploration, experimentation, that they can do whatever it is they like to do within certain parameters.
And what about, obviously, a big concern that many parents have in an age of where kids are screens, some of the kids can't be taken away for their screens, and that's where they go for their play. Do you think it's true that there is cognitive overload? Is that borne out by your research?
I mean,
and your
there really is. And for all of us, not just children, I just think, bearing in mind that children's cognition is still developing and they are very much a developing system, it, from that point of view, they might be more prone to overstimulation quicker than the rest of us. But actually, we could all take a step back and look at how hyperstimulated we are, how little boredom we invite into our lives.
How much time we spend on our screens.
Well, and children do take their behavioural cues from us. So, you know, while we're saying to take it off their screen. That's no good if we've a phone in our hand while doing it. And, you know, there can be a bit of screen panic as well. And we did lean into screen use during the lockdown period because we had to. And I would always look at it, is there a playful way to offset that? Because children's play patterns do change as they grow up. But, you know, the research doesn't bear out that a child is no longer interested in creative play. It tends to be that we deem they've outgrown it and we stop making those play opportunities available to them.
And what happens, you know, when kids say, I'm bored? When we were younger, that's a cue for us to be kicked out and told to come back when our dinner was ready. Or alternatively, why don't you go read a book, or why don't you go and entertain yourself? Yeah. And sometimes when I hear teenagers in particular say, I'm bored, I say, good.
Oh, I'm glad you do, because I think that phrase can send a shiver down the spine of parents, immediately, you know, pull us into, what, you're bored, do you want to do this, do you want to do that, let's go here, let's go there. Actually, boredom is wonderful. Boredom is a free-floating state of mind wandering, and out of that mind wandering will emerge those pathways to curiosity and creativity and ultimately desire and playfulness that we've been talking about. So the next time your child or teenager says they're bored, absolutely do that. Say, fantastic. I can't wait to see what you come up with to do. Children have so many resources and opportunities around them, but they don't often have time to do nothing. And there is something in that nothingness, isn't there? You know, that just having the space to exhale and do nothing but
be, and let them go and create whatever they want to create. When children are playing together and rivalry kicks off and there's tensions, and I know it's different if it's siblings, but even when children are playing together, at what point do you intervene, or should you intervene if that's part of their life skill, trying to navigate those kind of tense atmospheres?
Oh, I mean, it's a fine art, you know, really, because no matter what you do as a parent, especially with siblings, they're each going to accuse you of always taking the other one's side, no matter what you do. So this is
universal,
no win for you. It really is. And they'll, you know, give you lots of times that you did that just to back up their argument. But
what, and continue that into adulthood.
That does. That's, you know, bring it to the therapist couch later on then. But it is a part of it, because as a parent, you want to avoid being the referee. So when you say, when do you intervene? My instinct is at the last possible moment, but you don't want to wait until you're going, oh, 2 minutes ago, that was the moment I missed it. And now somebody's got a bloody nose or is injured. What you want to do is let them know that you hear what's going on. You want to say, I can hear things are getting heated in there, but I know you guys can work this out. I know you definitely don't want me coming in because I'm probably going to do something that you don't like. Giving them that reminder to fix it.
Everybody at home writing down that advice straight away.
But you can do it with an if and then. You know, if you keep fighting like that, then we can't do whatever it is. But if you guys find a way to work that out, then you get to keep playing. Your call. So you're putting it back to them, but you're putting the structure in place.
So if you're an adult, before I let you go, struggling to initiate play into your life, or maybe if you're just trying to kick off a more playful life for yourself, what advice do you give?
Start small. We wouldn't approach anything in our lives at the point of greatest resistance and say, I feel most uncomfortable here, here's where I'll start. So start somewhere that you can say, okay, I could manage that. That might be if you're sitting at your desk on a, you know, Monday morning, that you take out a piece of paper and a pen. Put the pen from your dominant hand to your non-dominant hand, close your eyes and just do a countdown in your head, 10 to 1, and do a big scribble around the page. Open your eyes and turn the page the other way, so 180 degrees. Put the pen in your dominant hand and create something out of that scribble. Put in features, put in a little added bits that creates order from the disorder. And it's helping us to work out, you know, when things feel chaotic and overwhelming to us, that we can just go, hang on a second, I can change something here to create.
Because play helps regulate
chaos. It really does.
Yeah, well, I'm going to now go and ask my producer for a play break. Because
all about the play breaks.
All about the play break. Send in a few doodles. But for now, Dr. Joanna Fortune, psychotherapist and expert in play, thank you so, so much for joining us. We really appreciate
Thanks
you coming in.
Thanks for having
in.
Me.
When was the last time?
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.